Honor thy father and thy mother. It's one of the Ten Commandments in the Hebrew Bible. In America, we have invented special Sundays in May to honor thy mother, and in June today to follow these religious commandments for thy father. As a minister, I officiate at memorial services, and I sometimes find myself in the position of interviewing adult children about their fathers. It is always interesting. Once a family gave me a 500-page autobiography to use in preparing the eulogy. But this was the exception. Because our fathers lived for many years before we were born, and because not all of our fathers were forthcoming about their lives, often children do not know the answers to the questions that I ask. What year was your father born? We'll have to check on that. Who were his mother and father? Did he have brothers and sisters? And if he did, was he the firstborn, the middle child, or the youngest? As a young man, what was his dream for his life? Assuming your mother and father were married, when did they decide to get married? What kind of parent was your father when you were growing up? How did he feel about his work? What were his hobbies? Did he read books? And if he did he have any favorite writers? There I'm looking for a quote, a poem perhaps, that I can use in the service. What was most important to him? I realized after several years of working as a minister that I could not answer all of these questions about my own father. I had fragments of stories, but there was much that I did not know. So one summer, about 25 years ago, I asked my father to tell me about himself. After a certain amount of reluctance, I got him to answer some questions. And then he started telling stories. He was born in June of 1919 in the hills of eastern Kentucky. Now, that reminded me that in the 1960s, our family watched this TV show called The Beverly Hillbillies. A show that made fun of people from eastern Kentucky. And also made fun of the people of Beverly Hills. Today, in fact, most people in America still think that the mountain residents of Kentucky are backward, barefoot people. They are always feuding with their neighbors and brewing moonshine whiskey as their main activities. Yet my father did not live up to the hillbilly stereotype. He said that my ancestors did not make moonshine or engage in feuds. Instead, he said, they were coal miners and school teachers. My dad went to the University of Kentucky in Lexington, where he became an electrical engineer. Eventually, he moved to Arizona, where he worked for the Bureau of Reclamation of the Department of Interior, deciding how much water went down the Colorado River each day. However, for my father, Kentucky was always his first home. When I asked my dad to tell me about his childhood, he would say that the Appalachian Mountains are like a foreign country. He would tell me that the people in the mountains do not think or act like anyone else in the United States. Snake handling is one example. Started in Sail Creek, Tennessee in 1909, snake handling still goes on today at worship services in the mountains. Theologically, it is based on an ending of Mark's gospel, which says, "And these signs will accompany those who believe. They will pick up snakes in their hands." As a young man, my dad worked at a gas station in Harlan County. One regular customer was a snake-handling preacher who carried his rattlesnakes around in the trunk of his car. He would stop for gas and ask my father to check the air in his spare tire in the trunk of the car. After the first time, my dad would refuse. The preacher would laugh at my father and tell him, "You ain't got no faith." This is one view of life in Appalachia. However, it's not all ignorance and superstition. Good schools are scattered throughout the mountains and the hollows. 65 miles north of my father's hometown is Berea College, founded in 1855 by an ardent abolitionist. Before the Civil War, it was part of an underground railroad that helped slaves escape the South. In addition, there is Union College. There is Sue Bennett College. There is Lincoln Memorial University and Cumberland College. Cumberland College, where my father got most of his education. After attending public school for 2 years and not learning to read, his mother, who was a school teacher, took my dad out of public school and placed him in the private elementary school run by Cumberland College, a demonstration school used to train teachers. So he attended Cumberland College from the third grade through his first year of college. One of his teachers, he told me, was Bessie Manum Rose. The students called her Miss Bess. She never married, but she did have romance in her life, my dad said. Her male friend was James Lloyd Creech, the president of Cumberland College. According to my father, they probably would have married, except for one thing. Miss Bess had a problem with her petticoat, he said. It seemed to always hang an inch or two below her dress. And according to the town gossip, James could never bring himself to tolerate this imperfection. My dad said that Bessie Mayhem Rose got her job in a particular way. A man named Will Mayhem willed $50,000 to Cumberland College with the provision that Bessie Rose would have a job teaching at Cumberland as long as she lived. Many people thought that Bessie Manheim Rose was Will Manheim's daughter. Miss Bessie taught my father about books. She had him read the whole Bible, not for inspiration, but as literature. He read Shakespeare's plays and memorized the most famous parts. He read Emerson's essays, he said, but it was never mentioned that Emerson was a Unitarian minister. Miss Bessie taught at Cumberland College until she died. Her final teaching was done from a wheelchair. Williamsburg, Kentucky is about 10 miles north of the Tennessee line. Mountains full of coal are all around the town. Today you can travel on Interstate 75, where they have cut away the mountain to make the interstate. You can look and see the seams of coal on the sides of the mountain. Coal played a role in creating ignorance, the ignorance for which Appalachia is famous. Olvel Rodham, who married my grandfather's sister, was the superintendent of the school in a mining camp at Black Star, Kentucky. My dad said that the county paid Superintendent Rodham a salary and that the mining company paid him an additional equal amount. For that additional amount, Orville Rodham agreed to run an inferior school and make sure the students could not qualify for college. This is one way the mine owners assured themselves that they had a continuous supply of cheap labor. Of course, the mine owners also fought the formation of unions. There was a great deal of bloodshed. Harlan County became known as Bloody Harlan. When my dad was growing up in the 1920s and 30s, there was a defined class system in Williamsburg. The division between the rich who owned the coal mines and the rest of the people who lived in the town. Next door to my father lived the Cheneys. They were part of the rich set. They had an airplane and lived in a beautiful southern mansion. On the other side of my dad's home was a family that had no plumbing. Water for the house came from a hand pump in the kitchen that supplied water from a well under the floor. My father's family was somewhere between these two extremes. They did have indoor plumbing and city water. The town had two churches, two Baptist churches. First Baptist was for the rich, and Second Baptist was for the poor. Dad said that he had childhood friends among both the rich and the poor. Edgar, his next-door neighbor, and my father were good friends. Their friendship lasted until they were about 17, when Edgar's parents forced him to go to the Virginia Military Institute. Edgar was about to do the unforgivable. Edgar, from the wealthy family, was about to do the unforgivable and marry a coal miner's daughter. When Edgar grew up, he followed his father's example and got himself an airplane. And he died when he crashed his plane in Mexico. Another rich friend of my father was David Ansel Perkins. You can still Google Perkins coal mines and find it on the internet. David Ansel Perkins and his family spent winter months in Florida. And in 1927, my father said he saw a photograph of his friend David in the Louisville Courier Journal. The newspaper photo was entitled 8 and 88. It was a picture of John D. Rockefeller, age 88, and David Ansel Perkins, my dad's friend, age 8, playing golf together on Rockefeller's golf course in Florida, just north of Daytona Beach. My dad's friendship with David Perkins pointed out the class system that was all around my father. Their fifth grade teacher, Alice Davies, would occasionally punish students with a big wooden paddle. Once David Ansel Perkins and my father got in trouble together. Alice took the boys out into the hallway, but instead of the usual paddle, she gave both boys a hug and asked them not to get in trouble in the future. You do not paddle the son of a wealthy owner of coal mines or his friend. The friendship with David Perkins lasted into high school, my dad said. It ended one day when David said he could not understand why some miners thought they should be able to buy a car. My father thought of the four cars in the heated garage at the Perkins house and their chauffeur, and he just could not be David Perkins' friend anymore. My dad died in Arizona in 2002. Nevertheless, I still feel connected to him and connected to the place where he grew up. Last summer, the Unitarian Universalist Association annual meeting was held in Louisville, Kentucky. Before and after the meetings, I drove the back country roads of Kentucky. I drove through some of the poorest counties in the United States. In the Cumberland Mountains, I saw men with bushy beards sitting in rocking chairs and staring from the porches of shacks. Some speak in accents I can barely understand. I saw mobile home dealers with signs saying, "Make your dreams come true." I saw notices on the side of the road saying, "Jesus is coming. Are you ready?" I read news stories about people who were bitten by a snake at a church service. As my father said, in some ways, visiting the mountains where my father grew up is like visiting a foreign country. But I also saw in those hills artists, musicians, quilters, dancers, storytellers. And the mountains are caring people, people who value education and learning, people who have wisdom because of life experience. It can be a beautiful country. And the mountains at night, just at this time of year, if you go for a walk in the woods, there are millions of fireflies, and they make their light in the evening under a sky full of stars. Our American Unitarian culture is a product of our British American culture. We have a tendency to place more value in speakers with English accents and to dismiss people with Southern or hillbilly accents. We tend to value complex intellectual and cultural abstractions, and we tend to discount concrete, simple speech. But my father taught me the values he learned growing up in the Appalachian Mountains. Once I told him that I was taking in graduate school a philosophy class. He asked me about it. I said, "Well, we're reading the French philosopher Maurice Merleau-Ponty's book, Phenomenology of Perception." He said, "I guess that won't do any harm." But Roger, most people don't give a damn about big words. They want you to be clear. They want you to be reliable. They want you to be honest. They want you to be fair. They want you to have courage to stick by what you believe. These are the values he taught me. Be clear, be reliable, be honest, be fair, have courage. Now, I've been talking a great deal about my own family this morning, but I hope it has stimulated you to think about your families. Each of us has a unique relationship with our father. It's not always good. Your father may have abused you, or your dad may have abandoned you. If this is the case, you may have no desire to honor your father. And I understand that. On the other hand, some of us have had a positive relationship with our father. So if they are still alive, a gift or a card or a phone call today feels right. When I plan memorial services, I find myself in the position of interviewing people about their fathers. And I am like a journalist. I ask questions to help me prepare the eulogy so that I can put together a brief statement about the highlights of a person's life. Sometimes it is only necessary to ask people one question, and then the family members start talking faster than I can write notes. Other times, people give me short answers and then wait patiently for my next question. I ask, where was your father born? What were his parents' ethnic backgrounds? Where did he go to school? Did he tell you stories about his childhood or stories about his young adult years? How and when did your mother and father meet? Do you have an old resume showing where he went to school and where he worked? Where did he like to go on vacation? Did he write you any letters about his life? How did he spend his retirement? It is always an honor for me to be with families as they explore and sometimes struggle to answer these questions. No adult child knows all the answers to all these questions. For all of us, there are gaps. There are mysteries about our fathers. However, if we are lucky, if we had a father who shared even a little bit about what mattered to him, what he valued, and if we have experienced him as a person who respected us and gave us the room to find our own life dream, then we know far more than the simple details of his life. Then we have some sense of our Father in all his complexity, and we can honor who he was and forgive him for his imperfections.